We're in Vrindavan with Krishna and the gopis and the gopas. And this morning we'll be completing one verse and continuing on to the next one. And we're going to be hearing this morning specifically about the cowherd boys and the Dham, Vrindavan Dham. So the first section is from Gopal Champu, Jiva Goswami, and this is from the very beginning of Gopal Champu, where he is describing Goloka, the abode. And the reference is made to text 15, our verse for this morning, and then we'll go on to 16. Shukadeva Goswami has described the gopis as being the same, of the same cowherd birth. Jati, that same term we heard yesterday. Text 15 of chapter 36 reads, having thus killed the bull demon Arishta, he who was a festival for the gopi's eyes entered the cowherd village with Balaram. Now some descriptions of the abode. The petals of the lotus of Gokula become the pastime forests with portions of the gopis who are forms of Lakshmi. Krishna plays unseen by others in houses made of chintamani, surrounded by thousands of desire trees. Krishna previously gave Radha control of Raja. This is stated in the Puranas. I conclude that Krishna is controlled by Radha's qualities, though this will be a repetitive statement in this work. So he hasn't gotten to the point yet in this first section where it's Madhukanta and Snigdhakanta talking. It's the author himself speaking. And continuing another section from Gopal Champu, that's also a description of the abode of Vrindavan Dham. In this way, the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is gloriously manifest, the abode of he who enjoys pastimes as Nanda's son. That abode is made of jewels and filled with glorious variety. Its limitless variety is manifested from Lord Anantashesha. It is said, in the filament of the lotus flower of Goloka are the abodes where the kind gopas, who think Krishna is their only treasure, reside. In this verse, the word daya means treasure, and daya dayaha means they who think Krishna is their only treasure. The word daya dayaha means a person who has great store of love for Lord Krishna. Such a person takes shelter of Lord Krishna. The word daya dayaha may also be interpreted to mean kinsmen. That many of the cowherd people were Krishna's kinsmen are explained by Shukadeva Goswami in these words, same text 15 of this chapter. Krishna was already the life and soul of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, and after killing this demon in the shape of a bull, he became the cynosure of all eyes. With Balaram, he triumphantly entered Vrindavan village, and the inhabitants glorified him and Balaram with great jubilation. When a person performs some wonderful feat, his kinsmen and relatives and friends naturally become jubilant. That's a translation of this text 15. Same verse is referred to in Krishna Sandarbha and some of the similar messages. Jiva Goswami's Krishna Sandarbha. The abode of Krishna was described. Now the surrounding walls, avarana, are described. The pericarp has stamens, kinjalka, which refers to walls around the central area. So pericarp, we did this yesterday. That's that piece that sticks up with a flat top in the middle of a lotus. And stamens is used interchangeably with that term, but here he's saying that it's the walls surrounding that central area. Other persons have a share, angshanam, of that place. This means that there are others present there who have similar nature. Since the whole area is called Gokula, Shukadeva Goswami has described the similar nature of the people. And here's text 15 again. Having thus killed the bull demon Arishta, he who is the joy, who is joy for the gopis' eyes, and who is praised by other cowherds, that's this, his kinsmen, entered the cowherd village with Balaram. The petals of the lotus are the abodes or groves of Radha and other gopis, Shriyam. There are roads at the divisions of the groves and villages at the end of the roads, since Gokula refers to the whole lotus and these are its components. Krishna permitting, we'll be able to go to Vrindavan next Kartik. Who knows? Bhakti Chaitanya Swami is like fired up, Krishna permitting, and his services permitting, and so forth. We'll be together in Vrindavan. And one of the options that he presented, what he could do is take our group to the villages of the Ashtasakis. He's really into it. whether we go or not, he has made videos or films, because he's really into videography, of those villages, and there's names and names and names, and it's kind of obscure, but he's taken the time and the trouble and the skill to find out which is which. So it's, you know, Varsana has 360 degrees surrounding it, and the villages of the gopis are somewhere in those areas surrounding Varsana, because they wanted to be proximate to Radha. And in a moment's notice, they could just show up when Radha needed them, or whether she needed them or didn't need them. They could be with her because they're dedicated to her. And so then there's details and details and details about their form, the type of sari that they would wear, their complexion, their nature, as well where they resided, what they did, some particular outstanding characteristics of their relationship with Radha. And it's described, aside from all those details, the characteristics of each of the gopis manifested a certain number of the qualities of Radha. So they were embodiments of her qualities. And their embodiment, they were expansions of her and embodiments of her qualities. So they are just assisting her in her pleasure pastimes, which are in relation to Krishna. And so what we're hearing, that's, you know, a little add-on to this. These petals, it's described in Brahma Samhita similarly. There's the pericarp, and then there's the filaments around the pericarp, and then there's the petals, and in some cases the petals are the abodes of the gopis, and some cases it says it's those petals are the residences of cowherds. Of course, they have their families, that the gopis had their fathers and mothers. And we can read about these things in our Acharya's texts. They know all these details. So we're getting some details about the abode, Vrindavan Dham, and it's how it is. It is said that it's a lotus, and here's how we can understand. Where the petals of the lotus meet the lotus stem or flower, those are roads. And then the roads have villages at the end, including villages where the gopis would live. These principal gopis, and how many gopis? Millions. So, back to Jiva Goswami's Krishna Sandarbha, where he writes, after the description of the internal abode of Krishna, which is the whirl of the lotus flower known as Goloka, there is a description of the petals situated about that abode. Those petals are the abodes of the cowherd residents of Goloka, who are all relatives and friends of Krishna, the same as this, they're of the same category, they're like him. Same cowherd family. That the cowherds of Vrindavan are the relatives of Krishna is described by Shukadeva Goswami in the following verse. Here we are, text 15 again. After killing the Arishta demon, who had assumed the form of a bull, Lord Krishna became the cynosure of all eyes. With Balaram, he triumphantly entered Vrindavan village, and the cowherd men who were all his relatives glorified him and Balaram with great jubilation. And then the final text for this verse. On this lotus flower of Goloka Vrindavan are many petals known as Patrani Shriyam, comma, the many gardens which are the abodes of Srimati Radharani and the gopis, where these petals join the whirl of the Goloka lotus flower, the paths of Goloka are situated, and the extensions of these petals are the places of the cow pastures of Goloka. In this way, the different parts of the lotus flower of Gokula Vrindavan are described. So, in different places, Jiva Goswami is giving us a picture. Some of it is repeating, some of it's some slightly additional information. But he's disclosing Krishna, which includes Krishna's abode. So now here's the translation for text 16. After Rishtasura had been killed by Krishna, who acts wonderfully, Narada Muni went to speak to King Kamsa. That powerful sage of godly vision addressed the king as follows. And then here's the BBT purport. The term Deva Darshana can be understood in many ways, all of which are consistent with the context and purport of this narration. Deva means God, and darshana means seeing, or an audience with a great personality. Thus, Deva Darshana, a name for Narada Muni, indicates that Narada had attained the perfection of seeing God. Getting Narada's audience is as good as getting God's audience. Since Narada is a pure representative of the Lord, and also that Narada's audience is as good as that of the demigods, who are also known as devas, that there are all these meanings of the term deva darshanaha reveals something of the richness of Srimad Bhagavatam's language. Paragraph. From the Puranas, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has quoted 20 verses describing a joking conversation between Radha and Krishna that took place after Krishna had killed the demon Arishta. This conversation, so kindly quoted by the Acharya, describes the origin of Radhakund and Shyamakund, Radha's and Krishna's bathing ponds. The verses are as follows. We read this before, and if you don't mind, we'll read it again, because it's very special. The Sanskrit, by the way, is provided. It doesn't say where, which Purana or Puranas. The innocent young gopis said, "Ah, Krishna, don't touch us now, O killer of a bull." Alas, even though Arishta was a terrible demon, he was a male cow, so you'll have to undergo atonement, just as Lord Indra did after killing Vritrasura. But how can you purify yourself with going to the trouble of visiting every single holy place in the three worlds? Krishna replied, "Why should I have to wander throughout the entire universe? I will at once bring all the countless pilgrimage places here and take my bath in them. Just watch." With this, Lord Mukunda struck his heel on the ground. Then he said, "This is the water of the Bhogavati River, coming from the Patala region. And now, O holy places, all of you please come here." When the Supreme Lord had spoken these words, all the holy places went there and appeared before him. Krishna then addressed the gopis as follows, "See all these holy places?" But the gopis replied, "We don't see them as you describe." Then those best of holy places, joining their palms in supplication, spoke up, "I am the salt ocean. I am the ocean of milk. I am Amara Dirghika." We spoke about that lake. "I am the river Shona. I am the Sindhu. I am the Tamraparni. I am the holy place Pushkara. I am the river Saraswati. And we are the Godavari, Yamuna, and Reva rivers, and the confluence of the rivers at Prayag. Just see our waters." After purifying himself by bathing, Lord Hari became quite arrogant. He fell into Maya, right? And said, "I have produced a pond containing all the various holy places, whereas you gopis must never have executed any religious duties on this earth for the pleasure of Lord Brahma." Then Srimati Radharani addressed her girlfriends as follows, "I must create an even more beautiful pond, so go to work." Having heard these words, the gopis saw that Arishta's hooves had dug a shallow ditch just west of Sri Krishna's pond. At that nearby spot, all the gopis began digging up lumps of soft mud with their hands. And in this way, a divine pond was manifest in short span of an hour. Krishna was astonished to see the lake they produced. He said, "Go ahead, lotus-eyed one. You and your companions should fill this pond with water from mine." But Radha replied, "No, no. No, no. This is impossible. Since the water of your pond is contaminated by your terrible sin of killing a cow, I will have my countless gopi companions bring the pure water of Manasa Ganga here in billions of pots. In this way, I will fill this lake with my own water and thus make it its renown unequaled in the entire world." Lord Krishna then gestured to a heavenly personality who was an intimate associate of all the holy places. Now, this translation is a little different. The other translation says one of the holy rivers spoke up. Anyway, suddenly that person rose up out of Krishna's pond and bowed down to the daughter of Sri Rishabhanu, Radharani. Then, with palms joined and tears pouring from his eyes, he began praying to her in devotion. "O goddess, even though Lord Brahma himself, the knower of all scriptures, cannot understand your glories, nor can Lord Shiva or Lakshmi, only Krishna, the supreme goal of all human endeavor, can understand them. And he feels obliged to personally make sure that you can wash away your perspiration when you're fatigued. He is always anointing your lotus feet with nectarian charo yavaka." So I looked it up. Charo means charming or beautiful, and yavaka is a type of cosmetic. Commonly it's red. So he's anointing your lotus feet with nectarian charuyavaka and decorating them with ankle bells. And he rejoices and feels most fortunate simply by satisfying the tips of the toes of your lotus feet. On his order, we have immediately come here to live in this most excellent pond, which he created by one stroke with his heel. But only if you now feel satisfied with us and bestow upon us your merciful glance, will the tree of our desire bear fruit. Hearing this prayer spoken by the representative of the full assembly of the holy places, Sri Radha was pleased and said, "So, kindly tell me your desire." They then told her plainly, "Our lives would be successful if we could come to your pond. That is the benediction we desire." Glancing at her beloved from the corners of her eyes, the daughter of Rishabhanu replied with a smile, "Please come." Her gopi companions all agreed with her decision and became immersed in the ocean of happiness. Indeed, the beauty of all the creatures, both mobile and stationary, was enhanced. Thus, gaining the grace of Srimati Radharani, the holy rivers and lakes in Sri Krishna Kund forcibly broke through its boundary walls and swiftly filled Radha Kund with their waters. Lord Hari then said, "My dear Radha, may this pond of yours become even more world-renowned than mine. I will always come here to bathe and to enjoy my water pastimes. Indeed, this lake is as dear to me as you are." Radha replied, "I will come to bathe in your pond as well, even though you may kill hundreds of Rishta demons here. In the future, anyone who has intense devotion for this lake which is on the spot where you chastise Arishtasura, who bathes or resides here, is sure to become very dear to me. And the final verse of these 20. That night, Lord Krishna initiated a rasa dance at Radhakund, generating a torrent of the greatest mood of splendorous pleasure. Sri Krishna resembled a cloud in Srimati Radharani, a brilliant flash of lightning filling the sky with abundant beauty. In this way, their divine glories permeated the expanses of the three worlds. Then he continues. This is actually the BBT purport final paragraph. As a final note, it should be mentioned that Narada Muni, being a great sage, understood that the killing of Arishta was more or less concluded the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan. Therefore, Narada, anxious to facilitate the transferal of Krishna's pastimes to Mathura, approached Kamsa and addressed him as follows. We're just going to read a little bit more. This is Vishwanath's commentary. Narada is referred to Deva Darshana. This means that he was endowed with transcendental vision like the Supreme Lord Deva, one who knows or sees the pastimes of Krishna. Narada, knowing that Krishna's Vrajalila was ending, to make arrangements to bring him to Mathura, spoke to Kamsa. The lightning form of Radha, whose glory is spread throughout the three worlds, who causes a shower of blissful rasa from the cloud of Krishna, performs rasa lila at Radhakund nightly. And Jiva Goswami writes, now we return to the topic. Two and a half verses explain. It should be understood that Narada went to Kamsa long after the killing of Arishta. The rasa dance at Govardhan took place in the middle of spring. Killing Kamsa took place later on the Chaturdasi of Shivaratri next year. Narada told Kamsa about Krishna's wonderful activities in Braja, from the killing of Putana to the killing of Arishta. Devadarshana means seer of mantras, darshana, or sage among the devatas, or it means he who has knowledge, darshanaha, like the devatas. Whatever he says comes true. The name indicates the following. This is the last for this morning. The prakat pastimes, this is quote unquote, this is his name is being explained. The prakat pastimes occur in every kalpa of Brahma. By the request of protecting the devotees, like the Yadavas and Pandavas, the Lord performs his human pastimes and not more. The Braja pastimes are completed. Now the Yadavas are suffering to the extreme and the Devatas are disturbed. The killing of Kamsa by the Lord should happen soon. The Lord appeared for that purpose. I will inform Kamsa so that he will bring Krishna to Mathura. We'll hear from Sanatan Goswami tomorrow morning. Any discussion? Instead of a wrap-up of what we just heard.
Maharaj, my questions are not related to the discussion.
Not related?
No,
okay.
If that's okay.
That's okay.
One of my questions is from the... This is a question my mother asked me from the third canto.
From the third canto?
Yeah, and I couldn't answer her question. Basically, in one purport... sorry, I was going to pull it up and I didn't... I forgot, but in one purport, there's a description where it says that we want to, a Krishna conscious, I can actually just read it, I got it now. So, Srila Prabhupada is saying that advancement in Krishna consciousness involves developing a number of qualities. And it gives a list, like truthfulness, cleanliness.
Okay.
One of these qualities is material opulence. And so she asked me, how does that fit into all, like, how does that fit into, like, simplicity and forgiveness? And I wasn't really sure.
I would want to take a look at the exact quote to see the context, because... Mm. Material opulence is not a prerequisite. You know, just take, for example, Sudama Vipra, Sudama Brahman. He was at the opposite end. Or Kolavachar Sridhar, or, you know, etc. So, when, you know, the trick word is material opulence.
Mm-hmm.
Opulence is something else. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was teasing or tormenting Kolavachar Sridhar, he was saying, I know you have great wealth. You're a miser and you're hiding your wealth. We'll talk about that later. So the wealth was his wealth of bhakti, not material. Material means in forgetfulness of Krishna. So, you know, look at the context, maybe look at the Sanskrit, maybe it's an editorial glitch, so many maybes, but material means forgetfulness of Krishna, so there's not, it's not a, a quality of a devotee is to have forgetfulness of Krishna.
Mm. Okay. Okay, my other questions are also not related to the class, but they're questions that I'm being asked and I'm not sure if I can answer them. So one is just a really technical question about when somebody takes sannyas, what is the criteria of them getting another name or title? Like, is there any formula or it's just...
No.
There's nothing, right?
Okay. No.
Okay.
Some insist, please don't, and some say, please do, and some don't say. And there's no rule.
Okay.
It's, you know, subjective, totally.
Okay, fine. And the question is, when we go back to the spiritual world, can we be with the same devotees we are with now? Can we serve together?
That's up to Krishna.
And, okay. Yeah.
There's some relationship. Relationships in spiritual life are eternal. What's it going to look like and shape and so forth? Who knows?
And the last question is in relation to some of the Black Lives Matter topic.
Mm.
And so one of the young persons, they asked, what is the origin of skin tones? Like, why did that even happen? And I gave the response that, well, everything that's here is a perverted reflection of whatever's in the spiritual world. So
that's
I was
the
thinking,
rule.
Sorry.
Yeah. Well, that's a good answer because Krishna's cows, they're different colors. The cowherd boys are different colors. You know, some really far out colors. So, as above, so below. That's the origin. That's a good answer. But, you know, here, it's guna and karma helps determine whether it's this variety or that variety, but that's not the question. Not which determines which variety, it's what's the origin. The origin is with this origin of everything. Look at the incarnations of the personality of Godhead. They're of different colors. We don't see somebody that's green. Okay. Others? Since we're all the way over there, nothing? Okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, as you are describing the beauty of Vrindavan in the last section, I was also thinking about the yatra where you covered Lord Ram's pastimes, and in that you mentioned about Chitrakoot, where you said that it is untouched by the so-called worldly change, that purity or essence of Chitrakoot has been retained. So I was thinking, if it's the Lord's will in the case of Vrindavan also, that it's subjected to the so-called change that has been going on, whereas in the case of Chitrakoot, it is that purity or that the true essence has been retained for ages. So just wondering what some thoughts on that.
I'm not sure what your question is, but that which is eternal doesn't change, and that which is temporary is always changing. And time brings about the change, and time moves things. Time moves everything. So it can, you know, get better, it can get worse, it can be, you know, this, it can be that. Modes of nature, karma, those who are sinful come and do sinful things. You know, we even during Krishna's time, there were demons in Vrindavan. There were demons in Vrindavan. Krishna, you know, let them have it. But there they were. And that's not like the covering. That's Vrindavan. Krishna let them have it. So, time brings about change. Is that all right?
Yes. Thank you.
Anyone else in the room? And then we'll go to, if there's something online. There's something online.
This question is from Rupa Vilas Das Prabhuji, and he asks, I was wondering, on which dates Krishna entered Mathura and Dwaraka, and why don't we celebrate those events?
Well, it's mentioned by, I think, Vishwanath, you know, which month and which day of the moon, and, you know, he doesn't get down to what time of the day, although it's in the evening, he reaches Mathura. We don't celebrate them. Or why we don't celebrate them? We have a lot of celebrations. You want some more? Why we don't? It's, you know, we celebrate what our acharyas and the scriptures give us. And that's what we do. So there may be some mind somewhere that they celebrate that day.
The next one is from Sanchari Dasi Mataji, and she asks, Guru Maharaj, this is a question on creation. Mm-hmm. Is there a fixed number of souls at the time of creation, or is it an ever-expanding number?
Fixed. And the number is asankhyataha.
The next question is from Prakash Narayan Govindan, and he asks, we are reading Krishna book every day with a group of relatively new people. Mm. We previously read Bhagavad Gita with them entirely. The Rasalila section, the Rasalila section caused much disturbance for one of the ladies. He put divided by two in parentheses after that. They found the descriptions mentally agitating. I found it very difficult to understand or help them. Srila Prabhupada gave us Krishna book for even beginners. How do we deal with this?
Next time, skip those chapters. And I guess it depends on the nature of this particular individual and how it disturbed them. And then, you know, it could give you some clue as to what to do. One of the principles that Jiva Goswami presents in his commentaries presented in the 10th canto, aside from his, you know, the fullness of his commentaries, he explains the distinction between Krishna's enjoying with his expansions and someone enjoying with someone that's not their expansions. The gopis are all expansions of Radha, and Radha is his potency. It's not a woman over there and enjoying with Radha and then they're her friends and enjoying with her friends. It's his potency. So the rule of impropriety is for people who are enjoying something other than themselves in a non-dharmic manner. That wasn't what Krishna did. It's his potency. They are his potencies. And he's, you know, so, like, just take eating. There's something outside of ourselves, and we're bringing that something outside of ourselves into contact with our senses. And that's altogether different than everything is Krishna's, and when Krishna's accepting something to eat, it's... It needs something to eat, and it's his anyways. So that's the meaning of Krishna's activity. He is simply interacting with his potencies. You know, so take it out of the context of Krishna and the gopis and put it in the context of Krishna and anything. And here's something that I heard from Rabindra Swarup Prabhu several times. As many of you know, he was beginning Krishna consciousness, he was completing his PhD, I think it was at Temple University in Philadelphia. And he was wondering, just two things. He was wondering, there was kind of a mood like, you know, drop out of society. So he asked Prabhupada specifically, should I just stop my academic training? And Prabhupada instructed him specifically, no, you do this and use it in Krishna's service. Now somebody else, he may have said, yeah, drop it. With Rabindra, he said, continue it. So he continued it. And then in the course of time, Prabhupada was visiting in Philadelphia, and Rabindra knew that Prabhupada liked interacting with government people and scholarly people and, you know, leaders of society. So Rabindra got the bright idea of inviting the professor who he was doing his PhD under to meet Prabhupada. He thought, like, hey, Prabhupada's going to like it. And the first thing the professor said was something confrontational. And that is, why do you worship a debauchee? He who is enjoying with other women. And Prabhupada's immediate response was, he is not the debauchee you are. And the man was like, what? And so he explained what I just said. And, you know, Krishna's with his potencies, and even your own wife, she belongs to Krishna. And you're enjoying with Krishna's. You're the debauchee. And Rabindra said, immediately I was really embarrassed. This man had insulted Prabhupada. And the second thing was, what Prabhupada was saying applied to him too. He was married. And he said, I couldn't sleep that night. I was thinking, wait a minute, I love my wife. I'm not, you know, a debauchee. He couldn't sleep. And then I forget exactly how it wound up, but, you know, the next day he came in for a landing. You know, there's religious activity, but even when you're doing religious activity, you should understand it's authorized according to the codes of Dharma, but actually my wife is Krishna's. And I'm Krishna's in her relationship with me. And that's sacred marriage. And, you know, most people don't think that way. It's lawful something. But, you know, the transcendental position of Krishna is not just lawful, it's his potency. And what isn't his potency? So he can interact with anything in any way you like. Now he sets standards. So wait a minute then. If he sets standards, then why is he doing this? He's showing his divinity. And these are his potencies. He's reciprocating with their love for him and his love for them. So the Vrindavan pastimes are very rare to be exhibited. Once in a day of Brahma is like, that's a long time. But they're celebrated pastimes and people can easily misunderstand them in so many ways without listing, you know, lifting over it on hill and so many things, killing demons and so many things. Oh, he's violent. You know, with you superimposing or projecting worldly standards because killing is bad. But then somebody, you know, Rishtasura, gosh, what are you going to do when Rishtasura comes to town? You can't just like sit down and say, hey, Rishtasura, let's have a conversation. This isn't really nice. Can you go do your thing somewhere else? You know, so it's the violence question is another big topic for some people that are moralists. Like, how could Krishna induce Arjuna to fight? Because Arjuna was being a good guy. He was saying, this is not right. And Krishna convinced him to do it anyways. So some people, the moralists, we may not interact with them, but there's a group of people that they just like trash Bhagavad Gita because Krishna is inducing Arjuna to kill. And killing is bad, Prabhupada. So killing is bad, but there's times when it's required, according to Dharma. That's for us worldly. And then what about Krishna? He's not bound. You know, so I don't know if this lady and what has disturbed her and what can pacify her. But there are different things you can consider. Next.
This question is from Sridhar Das Prabhu, and he asks, from the verse, we understand Narada is anxious to facilitate Krishna's transferal pastimes in Mathura, and Krishna also performed pastimes outside Vrindavan. But many times in lectures, Prabhupada mentions Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. Could I kindly understand why the Brajavasis are feeling separation in such a case?
That he never leaves Vrindavan is understood this way. He enters the hearts of the residents of Vrindavan. He's concealed from their vision by entering in their hearts. So he never leaves, but that's how he never leaves. He's in their hearts. And they're not seeing him, so they're feeling separation. And even they may be feeling he's in their hearts, they're still not seeing him. They want to see him. That's how to understand. Go ahead.
The next question is from Uttama Bhakta Das Prabhuji. And he asks, our knowledge of the Lord's multiple expansions plus planets comes from Brahma Samhita. What do Sri Vaishnavas and Madhava Sampradaya believe regarding multiple expansions plus planets other than Lord Vishnu's?
You can send him the document I sent you for a detailed answer. But you know, they're not identical. The Sri Vaishnava's view, Narayan is the Lord of Vaikuntha, and you know, I don't know if they have a picture of Krishna Loka, but Lord Narayan is the supreme source of everything in Vaikuntha, and Krishna is one of his avatars. So I don't know what their understanding of Krishna Loka is, but their understanding of Krishna is one of his avatars. And I know less about how the Madhvas view. Like, you know, the chief of the Madhvas is Madhvacharya, and in Madhvacharya's Udupi, Krishna is at the center. And then there's other forms of the personality of Godhead, other Leela avatars in different mats or temples. So how they view the abode, because that seems to be his question, yeah? What's the abode of the original, what's the abode of Krishna in the view of Madhvas? I don't know. Next.
This question is from Zhuang Zhang, and he asks, Hare Krishna, dear Maharaj, the living entity means the soul directly or a soul who has the material body?
Just don't Just say it again slowly. The soul has a material body or what?
The living entity means the soul directly.
Oh, it depends. Sometimes and sometimes. Sometimes that works. Just like Atma can mean body, mind or soul. So the living entity can mean different things. It can mean the covering or it can mean the soul. That's it?
I have one question.
Okay, go ahead.
So it's a sort of a follow-up question where it was stated that our knowledge of the Lord's expansions and planets comes from Brahma Samhita. I thought that it was also it's from the Bhagavatam as well.
It's all over the place.
Okay.
Your father has.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. When the list of the rivers are mentioned, the first one is mentioned as Salt Lake Ocean. So I'm trying to understand the sacredness of the Salt Lake Ocean.
All the rivers flow into it.
Okay.
We heard the rivers are female and the ocean is male in the relation between the rivers and the ocean. So the rivers flow into the ocean. The sacred rivers flow into the ocean. I'm not deciding what's sacred and what's not.
This is from Atulya Devidasi Mataji. And she asks, Maharaj, what should be the focus for cultivating new people? Chanting or reading the scriptures? And then I think and she also asks, and after Bhagavad Gita, what are the other books that could be read with the newcomers?
Well, new people depends on the new people. Some people like prasadam. So teach them how to cook. You know, different, according to the liking of the person. And I would say introductory literature may not be Bhagavad Gita. Introductory literature might be something like Science of Self-Realization and other things. Depends on the person and where, you know, their sensibilities. And then, you know, what comes after Bhagavad Gita depends on the person or the group. Go back and do it again. Or depends on the group. Sri Isha Upanishad is good. Nectar of Instruction is good. Nectar of Devotion may be a little bit, you know, rules and regulations oriented. They may be a little uncomfortable with rules and regulations. So that's maybe not a good one, good next book. Depending upon the people. Okay. Prabhupada ki jai.